Well, welcome everybody to Theatrical Sights in the 18th Century. I'm the moderator, Jack Sensor, and it's my pleasure to introduce one at a time as each person gives their talk. And the first talk is by Chris Adams. Chris holds her PhD from Johns Hopkins University, and she's a professor at St. Mary's College, Maryland. She has written two important books, Poverty, Charity, and Motherhood, Maternal Societies in 19th Century France, and A Taste for Comfort and Status, A Bourgeois Family in 18th Century France. And most recently, with her sister Tracy Adams and contributing author, she has edited Female Beauty Systems, Beauty as Social Capital in Western Europe and the United States, Middle Ages to the Present. Chris. Sorry, I'll move this to step over.
Okay, thank you, Jack. So this roundtable considers different theatrical sites that emerged in the 18th century, the ways in which individuals performed, and how audiences were invited to judge performances. When Mita and I started to plan this roundtable, we wanted to define theatrical sites as broadly as possible. So here we have in religious settings, in the courtroom, and for me right now in the world of fashion and cultural expression. The culture of theatricality and spectacle that emerged in the Renaissance court and theater created a world in which individuals are constantly aware of themselves as performers for a larger public. The impact of this mindset was reflected in the performance of the court in early modern France, where its members, especially the king and queen, performed under the gaze of other courtiers. Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette had tried to move away from the artificiality and ritual of court life to shape a private familial life, but found themselves under intense scrutiny and eventually under sharp attack for their public and private behavior, much like modern celebrities. The French Revolution, of course, led to the end of the monarchy and the court at Versailles and called for new modes of self-presentation. With the end of the Terror, the public demanded a new type of performance in the atmosphere of the Directory. Like the female courtiers who, under the Ancien Régime, paraded their beauty before the royal court and in Paris, the young women known as the Merveilleuses, who took society by storm under the Directory, performed beauty in a highly theatrical fashion, similar to modern-day celebrities. The public and the burgeoning press watched their activities and appearance with a breathless fascination, as did politicians, many of whom resented their defiant flair. Like the celebrities who perform for us today, these women were beautiful and glamorous. Stephen Gundel argues that glamour as a concept was fleshed out in the modern world, linked to both the consumption economy and the development of a mass media. This glamour became a key component of the performance of celebrity. Unlike fame, which is the reward of social achievement, celebrity is either won or conferred by the mere fact of a person's being popularly acknowledged, familiarly recognized, attended to, selected as a topic for gossip, speculation, emulation, envy, groundless affection, or dislike. This description comes from the cultural critic Frederick Inglis. Such is certainly the case with the Merveilleuses. This roundtable focuses on performance in the various contexts in which 18th century individuals consciously displayed themselves for audiences in new and different ways. In Gundel's words, glamour is a performance of prey that has no meaning unless it is widely viewed, and it is the type of performance that can lead to celebrity. So when did this link between glamour and celebrity, in fact, emerge? Gundel argues that the modern notion of glamour did not fully emerge in the court at Versailles, even though Marie Antoinette demonstrated certain characteristics of the glamorous individual. Rather, he focuses on Napoleon Bonaparte as the key figure in what he calls the transition from magnificence to glamour, which I find to be a rather odd, interesting choice, but anyway. But in jumping to the court of Napoleon I, Gundel vaults over a period during which I would argue modern glamour of the kind he describes with its link to celebrity crystallized. Undergirded by wealth, beauty, style, a riveted media, and a fascinated public, the Merveilleuses performed for a variety of audiences in the second half of the 1790s, and drew attention from both the political class and a popular audience. It would be anachronistic to see them as 18th century Kardashians. Still, women like Thérèse Italian in particular, who's described by Elizabeth Ammann as, quote, queen of the Merveilleuses, the arbiter of chic, and the cynosure of Directory society, and her companions became shorthand for the period as a whole, and, once again, like the Kardashians, sometimes seem famous simply for being famous. In her person, Italian in particular united many of the characteristics that Gundel associates with modern glamour, and demonstrated the power of beauty, public display, and conspicuous consumption. Madame Tallien effectively mobilized her personal attributes to form social and political networks, and, in fact, is credited with helping to bring about an end to the Reign of Terror, allowing the hedonism of the Directory to flourish. Until Napoleon Bonaparte came to power and limited the social and political influence of women, beauty such as the Merveilleuse occupied an important political and cultural position. For a time, it was possible for these women to operate effectively in polite society and political society. The unrest of this unsettled revolutionary era allowed women who were neither the stereotypical wives and mothers nor courtesans to gain political influence in a way similar to aristocratic women of the court under the old regime. But the key to their influence was most often their performance of beauty and the aura of glamour, rather than their social origins or courtly connections. And they very consciously played to a public fascinated by their appearance and reputation for libertinage. In a published essay, I wrote about the political influence of Thérèse Italien under the Directory. Here, and in a project that I'm beginning to research, I'm interested in developing the connection between the celebrity and political influence among the Merveilleuse, including women such as Joséphine de Beauharnais, later Joséphine Bonaparte, Madame de Château-Regnault, Fortuné Amelin, Aimée de Coignet, the actress Mademoiselle Lange, and salonnière Juliette de Récamier. Journals such as the Messager du Soir, the Miroir, the Abréviateur Universel, the Courrier des Spectacles, the Grandeur, the Ami des Lois, and the Gazette des Merveilleuses commented regularly on the fashions and activities of these women. A young Napoleon paid close attention to the Merveilleuse, writing to his brother in the summer of 1795, quote, "Everywhere in Paris you see beautiful women. Here alone of all places they appear to hold the reins of government, and the men make fools of themselves over them, think only of them, and live only for them. A woman needs to come to Paris for 6 months to learn what is her due and to understand her power." Madame Tallien drew particular attention from Napoleon as well as Parisian crowns, and according to a popular historian who said, "Thérèse suppers, the number of her shawls, and above all the domination she exerted through her salon and the men who were part of it were staples of conversation. The young officers noted that outside the theaters, it was always the violet-colored carriage of Citoyenne Tallien which was called first, and that when she was driven off to wild applause, a flying wedge of muscadin accompanied her to the Chaumière, which was her home with her husband." Other young women also drew attention. Visitors to Paris, such as Mary Barry, commented on the magnificent toilette and the beautiful dancing of Fortuné Amelin and other young women attending balls, and contemporaries commented on the fragile beauty of Juliette Récamier. Edouard Herriot noted that Thérèse, Juliette Récamier, and Joséphine de Beauharnais were the three graces of the Directory. Together they drove Paris wild and saw the most illustrious personages at their feet, those lovely feet which they wore bare except for sandals and with emeralds on their toes. They were to be seen everywhere. The Merveilleuse formed part of a veritable court based out of the Luxembourg Palace, despite the continued republicanism of France under the Directory. But the celebrity of Thérèse Italien had begun earlier, with her efforts to help fellow aristocrats escape the country during the Reign of Terror, her imprisonment, and dramatic jailhouse letter to her conventionnel lover, Jean Lambert Tallien, which she reportedly wrote in her own blood, castigating him for his failure to secure her release from prison, and then her recognition as Our Lady of Thermidor, her liberation from prison in August of 1794, and, if we are to believe popular accounts, her triumphant procession home on the shoulders of the crowd. For many years thereafter, she remained, quote, "at the center of Paris, curiosity and adulation, and causing delirium wherever she and Tallien appeared together in public," end quote. Thérèse's Merveilleuse friends also drew the attention of the crowds. Their frequent appearances at the Frascati gambling house and gardens, as well as Tivoli and Longchamp, were recorded in the press, and crowds waited to see them arrive at these venues. One imagines a red carpet. These women were very conscious of the impression they made and played to the audience. The future Joséphine Bonaparte wrote to Thérèse with careful instructions for the outfit she should wear to a ball at Télusson, which would be identical to that worn by Joséphine. And it worked. According to the Count de Pinchal, a royalist spy, incredible luxury, concerts, the theater, and the beautiful Citoyenne Cabarrus, Tallien's wife, these, rather than rationing and the fate of our armies, are the principal preoccupations of most people here, end quote. According to Eulalie Burkhart, descriptions of Thérèse's outrageous outfits were the staple diet of gossip literature and the Vérité rubric in the press, end quote. Other Merveilleuse also kept the journalists busy. So this connection between performance for the public, glamour, celebrity, and the political implications is worth exploring at greater length than I can do here in my 8 to 10 minutes, as is the political intent in the performances of the Merveilleuse. It was recognized by fervent Jacobins such as Joseph Duhem, who fulminated against Thérèse's illegitimate control over public opinion in 1794. My preliminary research, which is suggestive at this point, indicates that something new and interesting is beginning to happen during the Directory because of the very particular political and cultural moment, And I think that the implications of this, as well as its contextualization and changing ideas about publicity and performance over the course of the 18th century more generally, deserve further investigation. Thank you.